the Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are coming to you once again from Nick Saban's panic room in the crap part of the state of Alabama, where on the weekend we witnessed that nature phenomenon that brings National Geographic and photographers and people who just enjoy staring at the oddities and strange flora and fauna of nature to witness the running of the Gumps.
Is that why he has a panic room?
That's one of the main reasons why he has his panic room, yes. Because if you saw that horde coming at you like Walmart was having a blue light special, you would be in the panic room too, believe me. Just watching it on my phone screen, I was ready to go get in the panic room. So, John, tonight is part two of our three-part preview of Auburn's long-awaited 2014 season of tackle football. The relentless march to our inevitable place in the first college football playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Hashtag inevitable. We have a little bit of news this week as far as our branding and our image goes, don't we?
Yep.
Thanks to Auburn Elvis, at Auburn Elvis. Awesome guy, good, becoming a good friend online and a good friend of the program. He had done a couple of things sort of unofficially for us over the last couple of years, really without us even asking. He just was kind enough to send us some neat graphics for the War Eagle Reader and everything. And so I asked him, you want to put something together official at our request, you know, that would be our new logo? Because the logo that we've had with the little chalkboard and all that and the big orange letters, it was just disjointed. It had the actual Auburn AU, which we probably shouldn't have done. And we couldn't really use on any merchandise or anything, or even for ourselves, you know. And it was hard to read when it was small, like on a phone screen or something. And so he put us together this really cool square blue logo. He actually did a bunch of different variations, and I loved almost every one of them. I hated to have to pick, But we've got this really cool logo with the AU at the top and the orange goalpost that's kind of evocative of a wishbone with a little audio, you know, vibrations coming out and then wishbone. I even put the orange drop shadow just for me. Do you notice that? You might have vetoed it if you noticed. If you noticed that. He even did us several variations. But the unfortunate thing is, I agreed with him too. He was talking with me about it as he was working on it, that we kind of really want to focus our brand and not be different things, you know, in different places. And I thought that's absolutely right. And what we are is the AU Wishbone. And so that's just going to be our name from now on. We're not going to be, I say the Wishbone Podcast and Maddie says the Wishbone Podcast in the intro. But other than that, we're pretty much the AU Wishbone. This is the AU Wishbone Podcast. We have an AU Wishbone Facebook page at facebook.com/AU Wishbone. We have a AU Wishbone Twitter account at AU Wishbone. And we'll be the AU Wishbone on War Eagle Reader. And we already were on the War Eagle Radio Network. So just kind of consolidating our brand together so that people will know that they're getting you and me. It seemed like a good idea. So we got one logo, one name, and we're good to go everywhere. And it should start showing up in various places, including you can now put that little icon on your iPhone. I think maybe your Android phone. I was trying to figure out how to do it so I could explain it. I actually did it this afternoon on my phone to see how it worked, and it worked. It's pretty cool, but I can't remember exactly how I did it. So I'll try to figure it out this week and report back. next time. The other thing I need to say up front before we get into our material is, once again, this is part two of three of our Auburn preview. Next week, we will record basically back-to-back two episodes. Well, not next week, but our next episode in 2 weeks. We will record two episodes back-to-back. The first will be the last of the Auburn previews with Georgia and Samford and Alabama, which will be like a 45-minute good episode talking about those two big teams plus Samford. And then we will then record the barbecue episode. And I know everybody's been waiting on the barbecue episode. It's finally here. So for our podcast listeners, you'll get the barbecue episode where we sample the barbecue and look at each team in the SEC and predict what will become of them this year. And then, of course, John, we have our famous annual SEC preview where we have to compare all the teams to some other pop culture thing. And I have some ideas I will share with you privately after the show for this year.
All right.
And see what you think.
Sounds good.
All right. I'm going to crack open my Dr. Pepper Icy that my wife went and ran and got for me just now, which means it won't be, popping and fizzing and stuff, but I could possibly get brain freeze on the air.
Well, that would be exciting.
That would be. I will report. I will stop everything and report when brain freeze sets in during the show. I think many of our listeners may get brain freeze listening to our show sometime. All right. So what's new in the news before we get into our preview?
Well, the big news of last week was that Auburn signed a home-and-home series with your favorite non-conference opponent, Clemson.
Well, the only good thing about that is that we get some really good tweets from Cracky, the Clemson Tiger, eight ball, the Clemson Tiger. He always has great tweets. But aside from that, I mean, how do you feel about that? Are you like me, or do you have a different perspective?
I'm unhappy with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to play good non-conference opponents, so I'm fine with that part of it. But I just feel like we played Clemson a lot. You know, there's 100 other teams out there. There's probably 50 other major conference teams we haven't played that we could play a home-and-home series with, and I'd be fine with it. So that part to me is like, I'm just tired of them. I just want to play some. I mean, you know, you made all the comments online about how we play them so many more times than the other teams in the East, which is very true.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd much rather have a series against Florida and Missouri. We don't get that because of the SEC schedule. But I'm just tired of seeing Clemson again. What is going to be 7 times in 10 years, I think?
Yeah, the number I was throwing out that was mind-boggling to me was that by the end of 2017, unless we somehow play Florida in the championship game, over a 10-year span ending in December of 2017, we will have played Clemson 6 times and Florida once.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a rival. Florida's a rival of ours, and we will have played them once compared to 6 for Clemson. So now, I got in kind of a little mini bicker argument with War Bloggle because he thought that was not a relevant point. But I just feel like if you have a team that's a historic rival in your own conference – and you're playing them 1/6 as often as a team that has no connection to you whatsoever. It's not even a rival. You know, it's not like Georgia Tech or Florida, Florida State. That's their big rival. Of course they play them, you know, more often than they play Arkansas, you know, or something. But Clemson is just this team. How come we're playing them all the time? It's like if we were playing TCU every year. Who cares?
Well, and this is the thing that they were talking about with Matt Scalise in their podcast that I really disagreed with. And their answer was, well, that's all we could get. So just live with it. And here's what I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to run down some home and home series that major SEC teams have scheduled in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cool.
Georgia, as you know, scheduled a home and home with Notre Dame.
God.
Let's see. Arkansas is going back to their Southwest Conference things. They have home and home with Texas Tech, TCU, and Michigan. Arkansas got a series in Michigan. Okay. Again, we got Clemson.
God.
Kentucky is Louisville, but that's more of an in-state thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
LSU is doing this cool kind of semi-home and home with Wisconsin where they're playing in
That's nearby. Cool. Now, well, hold on. I have to say, I almost would rather play Clemson six times than play Wisconsin again.
Well, I'm not saying let's play Wisconsin, but again.
No, here, I know. You're right. You're right. I'm just just the thought of Wisconsin makes me kind of ill.
Here's other teams that LSU's non-conference schedule coming up in the future. Syracuse, these are home and home games, not neutral site games. I'm skipping the neutral site games.
Okay.
Syracuse, UCLA, Arizona State, and they're apparently close to a deal with Oklahoma.
Who is that? LSU?
LSU.
Gah.
Yeah. Missouri has made a home and home with Purdue.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But
aim high, Tigers, aim high. Yeah, that's
right. Tennessee has a home and home with Oklahoma. And future way out home and homes with Southern Cal and Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And Texas A&M has future home and homes with UCLA and Oregon down the road.
Man.
Okay? So I don't want to hear the all we can get is Clemson. Okay? That's who everybody else got. We can do as well as them.
That's crazy.
There are Pac-10 schools and Big 12 schools, you know, and Big 10 schools. Go out and get them.
So 2015, we have Louisville, right?
In the Georgia Dome in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
But yeah. that's our big out of conference team, right?
That's right.
There's not like because this year it's Kansas State, next year's Louisville, yep. And then it'll be Clemson and Clemson.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. I just think back to the early part of the last decade. We played Southern Cal home and away, Syracuse home and away. There was another one.
Georgia Tech.
Yeah, no wonder I blocked it out. Yeah, that's going to get us to our weird factoid of the week later on. Yeah, okay, well, enough about Auburn and Clemson, but just, is all I got
that's
to say.
Right.
Just,
we vehemently disagree with the idea that Auburn should have to settle for Clemson again.
The idea that we want to do anything to help Dabo just makes me nauseous.
Well, we'll just beat him. That's not going to help.
Beat him, but I mean, bring him money, exposure, TV game. I mean,
yeah.
We'll get them on TV quicker than they'll get us on TV. I mean, it's more of a win for them, is my opinion. But we do get a chance to write the series anyway, which was getting a little skewed, which we'll get to that. Let's see. What kind of news out of practice this week?
Well, it's exciting.
Underway.
Yeah, we have actual practice discussion, mm-hmm. actual real football to talk about, or yes. not theoretical, far away stuff, but mm-hmm. actual real guys practicing and real news in practice. The biggest news on the practice front, two things that came out at the beginning. One is Alex Kozon is injured and out for the year. That was a big blow. Was an All-American candidate at guard, awesome. Offensive guard.
It just made me feel terrible to hear that.
And, guy was a freshman last year, was an excellent young player and really came on strong at the second half when the running game was really good. He was making a real difference. And, it's not just – him and you plug another guy in, but they're going to shift guys around with him gone. Mm-hmm.
It's the whole left side of our line is gone now. We've gone from, we'll just replace one really good player with maybe another potentially really good player. Now it's everything left of center is gone.
Well, and it's not just that. It looks like they're going to move Slade from the right side to the left side to replace Kozon. And then plug in Avery Young at right guard, and then Patrick Miller would be at right tackle. So basically, there'll only be two guys at the position they were last year instead of four guys at the positions they were last year, which is where we were a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that's tough.
You know, Ellis Johnson said something sort of in a different context. Well, same kind of context, but a different situation. This yesterday that made me sort of think about this, what you just said. He was talking about how they had been moving so many players around the secondary, they finally just decided to just kind of keep it like it was and only replace one or something. In other words, between the Justin Garrett and Robin Stoops and all that, they're just moving everything around. And he said, his quote basically, I paraphrase, was, we finally decided we were moving everybody just over one guy and we didn't want to do that. And I hope we don't get into something negative like that with the offensive line is kind of what I'm getting at.
No, I mean, the good news is for Auburn, we have a lot of depth. Avery Young's a guy who started some games last year, and he's going to be the guy filling in You know, there are other guys that, you know, redshirted last year, were on the bench last year, that could come in and play guard. In addition, we got this Braden Smith guy who is the
number one
high school guard in the country. The guy that, you know, his nickname is like Ivan Drago from the Rocky movie because he looks like that guy a little bit.
I've heard nothing but good things about him.
He is gigantic. I know that. So,
yeah. I must break you.
I must break you.
So
that's another audio drop I got to go find now. Thanks, you know, a bunch, I mean, for that.
So it could be a situation where he, you know, could be this year's Kozon, where he could come in and eventually win a spot at offensive line and then, you know, be the replacement guard. So, and then we have some other guys that could fill in that spot. So the good news is we have a lot more depth that we still have a lot of experience on the offensive line, just not quite as much as we had. I still think Auburn is going to have, you know, one of the top two or three offensive lines in the SEC, but it would have had the best one going away before this.
Right. It's just disheartening a little bit, I guess. It is. But you got to think it'll be all right, I guess.
Yep. And the other big news that came out the first day was that Marshall and Jonathan Mincy will not start the Arkansas game because of their off-the-field troubles.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, immediately the question becomes, by not start, what do you mean by not start, Gus? Do you mean like Pat Dye not start?
Which is the famous Jeff Berger incident where he got in the trouble off the field and literally he didn't start. So after the first snap, he ran out of the field
and took over. Yeah. And the crowd went berserk because Pat Dye, I mean, even if you didn't agree in principle, just having Pat Dye willing to do that, you just had to love Pat Dye a little bit more. But the point that I made earlier this week about that was I get the feeling that Gus takes Nick's transgression more seriously than Pat Dye took Jeff Berger's transgression, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I expect him to miss the first half, probably.
Wow. Yeah, and then what do you do if Jeremy Johnson is just lighting it up? You switch him out anyway?
Yep. But I think they've said, regardless of whether this was going to happen or not, they want to play Johnson more than they played him last year. They want to get him some regular, you know, a series or two in regular games, I think. So.
Man, I this is making some real intrigue for the beginning of the Arkansas game. And as many of our listeners know, and you surely know, I'll be at Dragon Con during the, you know, every year I do Dragon Con and they pay me to come, you know, and so I kind of am obligated to do the panels and things that they put me on because they get me to come down there, and I'll be trying to sneak out and run across the street from the Hyatt to the, there's like a Durango Steakhouse right across the street from the Hyatt Regency, and that's where I watched most of Washington State last year. So I'm going to try to sneak over there because I'm really going to be curious what happens. Now the bad thing about Dragon Con being that weekend every year is that I miss, you know, the opening, pretty much the whole opening day. I record it and watch it later. But years like 2012 and next year, it really kicks butt because then I can find a way to sneak out and just stroll right across town to the dome and actually attend the Auburn game. So I have a feeling I was the only person in the dome that was a Dragon Con attendant.
I bet there were some people that did both.
No, I bet there were. There were probably, yeah. I did see, by the way, that we just picked up a commitment for 2016 from Stephen Davis Jr.
I did see that. It's exciting.
What does he play?
He plays a lot of positions in high school, but they're looking at him as a safety, I think.
Oh, okay. I bet he plays the whole team, one-man team, but if he's anything like his dad, but yeah.
He is. I don't think he's quite as big as his dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stephen Davis is pretty big coming out of high school.
Yeah.
But he's not quite as big as his dad, so I think they're looking at him as a safety.
Any other practice news that we – oh, I did see that you know that Coach Craig – I like calling him that now. He's always been Damian or DC, but he's now Coach Craig. He had Achilles surgery during the summer, or, you know, earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out there in a boot, so he can't get around as well. And so Gus has been, like, hands-on coaching the receivers a bunch the last few days. Have you seen that?
I have. That's good.
Yeah. So he said he's having fun doing it, and it's kind of neat to see him out there with the receivers. And you got to think that actually, of all the positions, that's the one that he really does want to kind of coach up, because that's going to be such a, hopefully, a big, you know, big part of our new offensive attack this year is going to be relying more on that, on the passing game.
Another other huge news that I've heard, I mean, I think the secondary looks pretty good, and they get, you know, Holsey is going to play cornerback. So the regular starting depth chart in the secondary, you know, would be Holsey at one corner, Mincy at the other,
yeah,
and Moncrief and Whitehead at safety. And then 3Z at star. So they feel really good about that.
Where do you fit Justin Garrett in, if at all?
Well, what they're saying is he's going to go back and he's going to play star behind 3Z. But he will back up 3Z. And then I think also it'll be a situation where, you know, in more run situations, third short or whatever, they could bring him in to replace 3Z to be more of a run stuffer. And then also situations where we need an extra, you know, need to go to an extra defensive back, they could bring him in, take out one of the linebackers and go to, you know, basically a 4-1-6 kind of defense. And, yeah, but he could be kind of an in-between safety linebacker, play closer to the line, and also cover somebody too. So, but I mean, you could see him being the first defensive back off the bench in the game. He and Jonathan Jones probably. So,
Tell me this: what do you see coming from the defense this year? I mean, given that we're losing, that we won't have Carl Lawson at least for a while, if at all. But given the reintroduction of Justin Garrett, given the situation as it's played out in the secondary and everything, the new line, the solidification maybe to some degree, at least up front at linebacker, you lose Holland, but you kind of have two solid guys there and then some backups. What do you expect just kind of overall from our defense this year?
I think the defense is going to be better across the board. I really do. They're not going to be, you know, top 10 in the country or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're going to be solid. I think last year teams got a lot of easy yards against Auburn because players were out of position or missed tackles or that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be – or there were guys wide open way too often. Yeah. And I think there's going to be less of that this year. I mean, I think there's more experience and more talent on defense, and Ellis has another year with them, Ellis Johnson, to work with them. And I think the biggest thing is I think – we're going to be good against the run. But I think, you know, we got a lot of talented big guys on the defensive line. I mean, we're going to this thing where you put Gabe Wright at defensive end. So, I mean, you could have a front with him at defensive end and, you know, Blackman and Montrevious Adams on the inside and Elijah Daniel, another defensive end. That's four pretty big athletic guys. And McKenzie and Frost behind him. And, you know, in a running situation, you could bring Garrett in for 3Z, who's about 10 or 15 pounds heavier. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I mean, I feel pretty good about Auburn stopping the running game of a lot of teams in the SEC.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I really feel like I think we're going to be better in the secondary, too. I mean, I know we had a lot of injuries last year. We play a lot of Ryan Smith and Ryan White, who are, you know, good guys and made plays and stuff. But, you know, we lost Garrett the whole year, and then Holsey went out halfway through the year. And then we were playing a lot of guys kind of out of position in different places. And I think the secondary is going to be better. I think Moncrief's going to make a big difference, having a big, physical, solid tackling safety back there. I think he's going to make a difference in the middle of the field. And then I really like Holsey at cornerback. I liked him when he started, you know, was there as a freshman playing that position. And I think he and Mincy together can be solid. And, you know, the other part is, again, Auburn's offense is going to put pressure on other teams' defenses. Other teams aren't going to be able to play conservative against Auburn. They have to take chances. And I think the defense will be quick enough and athletic enough to cause people problems. I mean, Auburn was terrible at times on defense last year. We went through those stats a couple weeks ago, but it was there. And I think the defense is going to be a lot better. I think that, you know, the biggest thing is just last year they were great in the red zone. They were great on third down. I think they're going to be better on first and second down.
Well, here's the weird thing that struck me. It seemed to me like last year, in the first half of the season, maybe the first third of the season, the secondary was playing really well. We were getting interceptions and stuff, but we weren't as strong up front at stopping, the run and so forth, it seems like. Yeah. And then later in the year, we got a little stronger in the middle, but we started giving up more passing yards. Now, I may just be I've watched the game so much out of order the last few months that I may be confused, but that just kind of is how it struck me. It just seemed like in those first two or three games in particular, we weren't slowing people down much, but we would occasionally do some interceptions, and I just don't really remember us getting very many interceptions after about the midpoint of the year.
Some of that was the quarterbacks we were playing, I think.
Yeah.
They were a little, not as good. I mean, again, Auburn faced as good a slate of quarterbacks last year from start to finish as any team in the country has faced in a long time.
That's the truth.
Aaron Murray, Manziel, Jameis Winston, the guy at Missouri, and his backup who both played in that
Metzenberger,
game. Metzenberger.
The Washington State quarterback.
A.J. McCarron, Connor Holiday, Washington State. So
that was quite a murderer's row of quarterbacks. That was.
It was. I mean, Bo Wallace. Dak Prescott.
Oh, yeah.
Talked about tonight. So I
absolutely.
Think that's the thing is it was a lot of very talented quarterbacks. And so part of the reason that Auburn gave up a lot of yards passing is just those guys. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see that across the board in the SEC with a lot of those guys gone. The passing number is going to come down a little bit.
Well, two quick things before we get into our opponent previews. One, the Princeton University rankings came out, and there were a few things that were interesting about where Auburn ranked. If you go to the Auburn page, they have their highlights up there. Let's see. I guess this is like in an annual year or something. We have 15,745 applicants with an 83% acceptance rate. The total undergraduate enrollment is 19,799. My tongue is frozen from my icy. Sorry, I can't enunciate very well. We are 63% in-state, 37% out-of-state. No, I got it backwards. Really? We're 37% in-state, 63% out-of-state? Really? That seems almost backwards to me, but okay.
A lot of people from Georgia, but
and over half of all of our freshman class, over half had an average GPA of over 3.75. Over 3.75. That's pretty good.
It's very good.
How'd they let me in?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. Well, they were letting anybody in. We are the number 13 university for future Rotarians and Daughters of the American Revolution. We are the number 13 most unfriendly to gay and lesbian people. That's the thing that shocks me is I want to know who the other 12 are because I does have that reputation.
Keep going.
We are the 20th of happiest students. Aww. Well, I was happy. So there's 19 other schools that have happier students, but everybody else is less happy than Auburn students. And we are the number one jock school. I don't know how. I'm not surprised we're in the top 20, but we are the number one jock school.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. Let's see. It's interesting. Religious affiliation, no affiliation. It's funny because it started out as officially a Methodist college, I believe, and it was East Alabama Male School, MALE Male School, and it was a Methodist school. And today, from everything I understand, are we not the biggest, unofficially the biggest Baptist university in the world?
I don't know about that.
I think that's what I used to hear, is that Auburn is the biggest, unofficially the biggest Baptist university. But anyway, it wouldn't surprise me. In-state tuition, $8,500. Out-of-state tuition, $25,000. 776. So there's 25,776 reasons a year why my kids probably will not be going to Auburn, which is sad, but they really don't do a lot to help legacies, do they? So there's Auburn. Any thoughts on that before I click that window closed?
No, it's interesting, but I mean, it's the in-state, out-of-state thing is how a lot of colleges are now. So
I guess so.
Good.
The other thing is we have our weird factoid of the week, and this sort of touches on something I talked about a little bit last time. By the way, these are always written on that shower paper, the paper you can that comes on a little pad with suction cups, and you put it up in your shower, and it comes with a pencil that you can write in the shower in the water with, and it stays. Because these things come to me in the shower, so you know they have that. If you're always getting these ideas and thinking of things and not able to write them down because you're in the shower, they've got like a little pad and pencil that actually works in the shower and sticks on the wall. So there you go. Here's your weird factoid of the week. You know that in modern history, Auburn dominates Georgia Tech, Auburn dominates Vanderbilt, and Auburn dominates Clemson. In fact, Clemson hadn't beaten us since the early Eisenhower administration until 2011. But considering that we dominate Georgia Tech, Vanderbilt, and Clemson, what do all three of those teams have in common with us right now? Have in common related to us right now?
We're not playing them right now, but I don't know.
Well, each of them has a two-game winning streak over us.
Mm.
I know. They all three are teams that we absolutely have dominated. You know, in other words, if the series is close with them at all, it's because they used to beat us when people took horse and buggies to the game. But they've each won the last two. Tech was in 2003 and 2005. Vanderbilt was like 2008 and 2012, I guess. And Clemson was 2011, 2012. So, like I say, the one good thing besides tweets from Cousin Cracky of playing Clemson again is at least we get a chance to correct that horrific statistic. And now I'm going to get rid of that. Paper sounds weird because it's that shower paper. All right, let's do our previews.
All right.
Who's up first?
First game we're talking about tonight is at Starkville at Mississippi State.
That game scares me to death.
Me too.
Scares me to death, yes. Wow. They've got everything that they had last year, which was not horrible. And they're going to be better in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me nervous. And it's over in, as you like to say, in Stark Vegas. So, that game, studying up the last couple of days, just making sure I understood everything there was to know about this game, I was starting to get the sweats.
Yeah, they're pretty scary. I mean, if the SEC West wasn't so freaking loaded, I could easily see a situation where State, you know, breaks out and finishes like as the number two team or something. I really could. Their defense was excellent last year. They have 9 starters back and a lot of talented guys behind them. I could see a situation where the Mississippi State defense finishes in the top 2 in the SEC in total yards and points allowed.
Man.
So their defense is going to be really good. They're well coached. And then on offense, they got Dak Prescott back. He gave us all kinds of problems last year. They got the leading returning receiver in the conference,
mm-hmm.
which nobody in a million years would guess who
it was. Mississippi State, right, yeah.
It was Jamie Lewis in Mississippi State. And their offense is pretty good with Dak Prescott. It's not great, but I think he gives them that kind of thing that Mullen wants to be able to do in that kind of Tebow Florida offense. I think he can do it for him. So
he barely missed a Cam Newton-style 2000-1000 season last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't even the was he
no, the, and he missed some games.
He wasn't even the, I was going to say at the beginning of the year he was like the backup, wasn't he?
That's right.
We talked about this one time a while back that the Mississippi State fans were saying that if you go back and look at every time they've ever had a returning quarterback they would always, the fans would always be wanting the next guy. Because they would always yes. think the next guy was better than the guy they've got. And so last year they started out with whoever it was, and everybody
Tyler Russell.
Yeah, and everybody wanted Dak Prescott, and Prescott came on. So maybe this will be the year. It's funny because this is the year that Gus gets a quarterback for the second time, for the second year finally. Maybe this will be the year Mississippi State is actually satisfied with their starting quarterback from the very beginning.
I think he's going to be pretty good. I think he's going to be solid. He's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC this year. So, Mullen is, they've had some decent seasons. But the other part is, their schedule is just freaking laid out for them. It really is set up for Mississippi State to have a good year. Do you know who their opponents are from the East?
I know they got at Kentucky. Oh, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Kentucky and Vanderbilt are their two Eastern opponents. Okay? So, really, it's a situation where, they don't play any good non-conference teams, basically, okay?
Well, when we sample the barbecue, I'll go in more depth on what I think will actually happen in their season. But it's a very good point that they're going to have momentum, right? They're going to it'll give them confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Racking up wins, yeah.
So the only, we play them the week after they play Texas A&M in Starkville. So I think that's a little bit of a help to us. So you always like to play somebody coming off another SEC game like that. But,
we get them after LSU and Texas A&M, so that's nice. There's a week off, but still.
That's right.
They'll be off on the 27th of September.
I think they're a well-coached team in terms of especially the defense, the way they play. And I think Auburn's going to have to play really well when you go over there.
So. Their weakness, the offensive line is slightly questionable, but their weakness is special teams. Their kicker. Did you see how many field goals they made last year?
I did not.
They were 10 of 21.
Ow.
That's less than 50%.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. They're one of four teams, I guess, in the country that did not make 50% of their field goals. So guess what their kicker from last year will be doing this year?
I don't know.
He will be punting. Because you don't have to put it through a little box to get something with a punt.
Well, and because it probably cost him some games. Oh, my gosh.
Well, the kicking job is now going to sophomore Evan Sobiesk, who also kicked six field goals last year but only made three. But he may have been maybe the long-distance guy or something, so I'm not entirely sure. I don't want to make anything definitive there, but
well, if they were making so few, I'm sure they threw some other guys out there to try.
You got to, right? That's when you start going for two after every touchdown, just because you figure you got a better shot.
Either that, or you transfer to Alabama and become the starter.
That's right. Very good.
Sorry.
Well, I do like that that their Achilles heel may be their kicker. There's a little sort of poetic, whatever to that. All right.
But also, we've talked about our concern about Auburn's kickers. We feel our special teams are going to be good, so that's a
give us a little advantage, right? Okay, who's next?
All right,
the chickens.
Next game, we get a week off, and then we get South Carolina and the old ball coach at home.
We have another week off that soon. Oh, that well, actually, we're kind of toward the second half of the season at that point, aren't we?
That's right.
Okay. Now let's remember, when was the last time South Carolina beat Auburn as members of the SEC?
I think it's never.
It's a trick question. Never. That's right. We beat them twice in the 90s, at least twice under Tuberville, and at least three times under Chizik.
Our all-time series record is 9-1-1 against South Carolina.
Yeah, and the one was before the SEC, before 92.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so is the one. It's uh-huh. basically like 7-0 since they joined the SEC. But this may be the best chance that they've got because they've got a pretty good. Now let me say, South Carolina is I've watched the trends. Okay, have you noticed this? First, everybody's like, oh, South Carolina is going to win the East, right? And everybody jumped on the bandwagon. Oh, South Carolina is going to win the East. And then Barrett Salee, I love Barrett Salee, awesome guy, sports guy. He said, I'm kind of jumping off the bandwagon. I don't think they're going to win the East. And suddenly everybody's like, no, South Carolina's not going to win. Oh, South Carolina's not going to win the East. Oh, I've totally misjudged them. So the point that Barrett made that I thought was valid was that their defense is taking some serious damage from last year, and they can't really reload as well on defense. What do you know about that?
Well, I mean, you know, some of the guys they lost. I mean, they lost, you know, the best player in the country last year, and the number one pick in the draft, and Clowney, and they also lost Kelsey Quarles, who was an excellent defensive lineman. I think they lost both their starters at the cornerback, you know, who got picked in the draft. So, I mean, that's, you know, they got six guys back on defense, I believe.
And they're having to shuffle them around a bunch, too. I mean, they're having to do like we do when one's injured. You know, they're having to, just to cover all the spots, they're having to play guys out of position. And when you start thinking about that, then you start going, ooh, that bandwagon's got some smoke coming out of it and starting to wobble a little bit, you know?
I mean, the other thing is they do have a lot of talent come back on offense. They, you know, they got four offensive linemen back and Mike Davis, who's, you know, maybe the best running back coming back in the SEC this fall. So you figure, you know, those guys, Mike Davis, you know, solid receivers. The quarterback's played a lot as a, you know, backing up the other guy the last couple of years.
Yeah, they feel pretty confident, Thompson. They feel pretty confident in him, I think.
That's right. So, I mean, and you saw him play last year when they needed to, and he made plays. So I think, you know, he's not a freshman. He's an experienced guy. He's got some SEC game experience. So they're going to be fine at quarterback. They're going to be fine on offense. I mean, you feel like Spurrier with returning experienced quarterback, talent on offense, they're going to score points. So I figure their defense is going to take a little bit of a step back, and their offense is going to have to step up a little bit. But this is a very experienced, dangerous team. Auburn's going to have its hands full. I'm really glad we got a week off, you know, after the trip to Starkville to prepare before Auburn has to play them.
I think part of the reason people are beginning to question them having the East, too, besides the defense being kind of down, is that their Western opponents are Texas A&M and Auburn.
That's right.
So it's not Alabama and LSU. I mean, well, Auburn is obviously better than LSU, but, I mean, it's not the toughest you could get, but it's not far from the toughest you could get in some ways. It's dangerous.
That's right.
A&M is certainly dangerous. Whether you think that they're a juggernaut or not, A&M is certainly a dangerous team. So,
and they have to play them in the opening game.
Yeah.
A&M.
Oh, that's going to be – that's, isn't that the Thursday night?
That's the Thursday night SEC Network kickoff game.
Dude, I'm on a jet plane Thursday afternoon flying down to Atlanta to the ATL, and I'm going to be hooking up with my buddy Bobby Polite, who co-plots some of my novels with me, and we're going to be finding us a nice sports bar or something and watching the kickoff of the SEC Network on that Thursday night before – oh, man, that's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Excellent.
Can't wait. So overall view, South Carolina, I mean, they've won 11 games like the last, what, two, 3 years, which is funny because the last time they didn't win 11 games, they went to the SEC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
They've had better records the last 11, 12, 13. They won 11 games each of those years. I kind of have a feeling they're not going to do as well. I'm not totally jumping off the bandwagon. I just think their schedule is a little tougher than people realize. I mean, that defense, I don't know if they can score enough points to keep up. Again, we'll get into our in-depth look at those teams later on, but what's your risk assessment for Auburn for them?
It's very risky. I mean, it's not, you know, Alabama, but when I look at Auburn's schedule, when I think about all the games, you know, I'm worried about, you know, this is up there. So, I mean,
well, I'm glad it's in Jordan-Hare.
Yes. I think if it was on the road, it would be, you know, maybe number two at the most dangerous game after Alabama. But I think at home, but I think, you know, in terms of our home games, I'll probably say it's more dangerous than LSU. I got to be honest. So,
mm-hmm. I agree.
So,
let's see.
All right.
At Oxford.
Yep. At Ole Miss the next week, Dr. Bo Wallace, our final engagement against him. You know, Auburn really played well against them last year. This was the first game when we, you know, had the – everything seemed to kind of really go well. So I feel good about Auburn and Ole Miss. Again, another team in the West with a lot of talent that if they were in another conference or somewhere else, they'd probably be fine.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they got 10 guys back on defense.
Well, so. I like how Hugh Freeze put it. Like, he's like, says something like, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I know the team's going to be better this year. Will that be reflected in the outcome, in the results of the season? I don't have any idea, you know. And that's a very valid point.
Yep. And it's fair. I mean, again, they may be better, but it's the West, and it's going to be brutal on them. So, I mean, they do have a lot of experience on defense. They got a returning quarterback. They got a, you know, a big-time wide receiver. One of the things you and I talked about last year with them is this offense would be better if they had a really big, sturdy, dependable running back.
Yeah.
And you could really see that late in the season when they were playing freaking defensive linemen at running back. It's these gimmick kind of situations. So
right.
I think if they had, you know, and they've brought in some new guys, but if they had a big, solid running back that could really push between the tackles and get the tough yards, I think this would probably be a very tough offense to stop.
Yeah. They should be improved across the board, though, in a lot of ways, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
they're I lost my place on my notes. There they are. Yeah. Well, they had a lot of injuries last year, I had noted, but they should have maybe their defense a little back up to speed now. They've got new kickers and punters like we do, so that's interesting.
And they do funky stuff on defense, which messes up some other teams. But, you know, they have a lot of highly recruited guys, a lot of talented guys. I mean, you know, they got this Tony Connor guy at safety who is, you know, I think is just excellent. I'd love to have him on our team. It's like, you know, they have that guy, and then Mississippi State has that one defensive lineman, Chris Jones is excellent. So I'd love to have him too. So I think it's going to be a tough game because it's there. It was pretty even. You know, it's going to be a pretty evenly matched game. Auburn's going to go over there and play well in that game too. So,
yeah, you know, well, Ole Miss has that really good offensive lineman. I wish that we had him. Oh, wait, we do. Okay, so Ole Miss, I mean, I'm going to sum Ole Miss up this way. Will they be better? Probably. Are they a good, solid, well-coached team? Yeah. If we cannot beat Ole Miss, then the season is not going to be what we wanted it to be. We're not going to go 11-1 and our one loss beat Ole Miss.
That's fair.
Right. So if the season goes the way that we kind of are hoping and expecting to some degree that it will go, Ole Miss will take care of itself.
Yep.
All right. Now, finally, of the four this week, I mean, this really is kind of a murderer's row right in the middle of the middle to the latter point of the season. Because next, we welcome back in Texas A&M. And, man, I mean, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. And that's before – and then Georgia.
Yep.
Man. I mean, that's what people are looking at when they're putting us fifth or sixth in the rankings. They're not looking at our team and saying, oh, Auburn is not as good as last year or whatever. They're not doing that. They're looking at Mississippi State, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Georgia, and then after Stanford, Alabama. And they're saying, you know, you can be better, but good luck walking through that minefield.
That's right. So, obviously, A&M loses Johnny Manziel, Mike Evans, also loses
Dodgy Flapper,
your favorite guy. Also losing the left tackle. It's on the Falcons now.
Matthews.
It's on the top picks in the draft. Yep. So, I mean, that's three really high drafted guys who are impact players and guys that really dominated the SEC the last 2 years. So, their defense was terrible last year. I mean, just awful. And
that was a terrible defense. That was as bad of an SEC defense as I believe I've ever seen.
It was so bad. So they couldn't stop anybody. So, you know, that defense, they have a lot of high recruited guys coming back. Will they be better? Somewhat, probably. You know, they got some high recruited guys at quarterback who are going to step in and try to be Manziel. They got a bunch of, you know, five-star wide receivers to throw the ball to.
They got
four guys back on the offensive line, including another guy that's going to be a first-round draft pick. So, you know, if one of these guys can play quarterback, you know, they're going to be competitive. One of the guys they're talking about is Kyle Allen, who's a true freshman. And to me, he may be fine, and all the guys, you know, they got good running backs, they got good receivers, they got good offensive line, but you start talking about a true freshman quarterback in the SEC, I don't care how good you are. You know, when you go on the road or you face some of these tough defenses, you're going to, you know, you're going to turn the ball over. You're going to miss your wide receivers and make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think it could be a kind of thing where he has games where he's great and everything works. He has other games, you know, when everything falls apart. They open the season at South Carolina. Are you going to start a true freshman on the road in Columbia in that game?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. So,
well, you know, I want to ask you this. The Texas A&M running backs, they're good. They're not bad. They're not, like, spectacular. But here's the I was trying to think, why have they never impressed me that much? And I think it's because when you had, you know, when you had Johnny Manziel running around dodgy flapping all over the place, it's kind of like they were overshadowed. They were,
yes.
They were, like, also Rans in his offense.
Well, and they got a lot of, you know, Manziel took a lot of carries.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, they were kind of like, they were kind of like Mario Fannin was to Cam Newton. You know what I'm saying? In other words, yeah, not bad, but who's watching him? They're watching the other guy, and so they just don't have that visibility. So I'm really curious to see what A&M's running game looks like without Dodgy Flapper out there getting all the attention.
I agree. I think it could. Yeah, they're still going to run that four wide out spread offense, but it could be more carries and more plays to the running backs without Manziel kind of dominating the ball.
Yeah.
So
I'm just curious about that. Well, any other thoughts on Texas A&M? I know they have a good kicking game. They found a kicker last season that was
well,
really
they
good.
They brought their punter to SEC Media Day, so I hope so.
I thought only Vanderbilt did that.
The biggest thing is, I mean, They had those three guys last year, Manziel, Mike Evans, and Matthews.
Yeah.
And they had great seasons, and it was good enough for A&M to go 4-4 in the SEC.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
So, you know, you look at that and go, okay, if the offense takes a big step back, even if the defense gets a better, they're going to have problems.
Well, we've said it before that in the SEC West – you only have to show one little vulnerability, one little weakness, and suddenly you're fifth out of seven teams.
That's right.
You can be – you remember, I mean, I made the point before that like 2 years ago, LSU had double-digit wins and was seventh in the SEC overall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just astonishing. That's like one of the most amazing stats I've ever heard. Seventh in the conference with 10 wins.
Yep.
It does. I mean, so, you know, that's like I was using that basically to explain the 2012 Auburn team, which is, you know, the same players basically as 2011 and 2013, more or less. But all it takes is one little vulnerability, one little internal dispute among the team, one little bad offensive coordinator, you know, one head coach looking the wrong way. And I mean, it doesn't take much to slide from 10-2 to 3-9 or whatever. It really doesn't take much.
Mm-mm. And I think A&M's going to be competitive. They're going to play, you know, hard, and they're going to score points and stuff. But I just think the defense has got too far to go, and I think the offense is going to take a step back without Manziel making every single play for them. So,
well, we may be facing a tough murderer's row there, but I'll say this, John. When the armies of Macedonia and Greece – marched into Asia to face the biggest, toughest empires and armies that the world had ever seen, the Persian Empire and the Mughal Empire and all those powerful, you know, elephant riding armies and all that and the chariots and everything. When the Macedonians marched into Asia, they crossed the Hellespont and went into Turkey and went on into Asia. They knew what they were taking on, but you know what else they knew? They knew that their general was Alexander the Great, and they had no fear. They only had this sort of serene confidence that they were being led by the most brilliant tactician with the most brilliant assistants in the world, and so they could face anybody without blinking. And when I think about Alexander the Great, which I do from time to time, since, you know, that's what I kind of do for a living, When I think about that, I think about Gus Malzahn, and I think with him in charge, honestly, I'm not afraid of anybody.
That's right.
I feel like we have the phalanx. The hurry up, no huddle is our phalanx. Bring it on. Bring on your elephants. Bring on, you know, your giant armies. Bring them on. Bring on your bulldogs and your chickens and your hogs and all that. That's fine. We've got the phalanx. We've got the slicer and dicer that moves at light speed. I'm not afraid. So let's get it on.
No, I agree with that. I think, you know, we talked about this a couple of years ago when we were – this podcast was very depressing during the 2012 season.
Yeah, it was.
And one of the things we talked about was, you know, you have to have confidence in your plan that it's going to work.
Yeah.
And at some point during that season, the players didn't have confidence that the plans, the offensive plans especially, they were sent out there to fulfill were going to succeed. But if you're an offensive player on Auburn this year, you had to be like, coach, you tells me to go over here and wave my arms or whatever, I'm doing it. You know, I'll do whatever. They tell me to be there, block this guy, I'm going to be there, block that guy, because it's going to work. So,
hey, if you'd asked me about the execution of our offense in 2012, I would have said I'm in favor of it. Or at least the coordinator. Capital punishment.
Well, all right.
Is it time for listener questions?
It is time for listener questions. You ready?
All right, let's get it on. Ready.
All right. First question. Got a couple different things here. The first one is, if it was up to you – this is from Bradley Blackman, who asked, if it was up to you, how soon for Nick Marshall getting into the game if Johnson has the hot hand, or what if he's not hot? So what if it was – if you were Gus, when would you put Nick Marshall in the game?
See, to me, that's just so tough because the longer you keep him out, the harder it gets. But the sooner you put him in, the worse it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly feel like he's kind of by necessity or by circumstance, we've been painted into a corner. I don't like it. I don't like something being a punishment that is so closely tied to performance and to the flow of a game, totally irrelevant of the or regardless of the players' personalities and behavior and everything. It just I wish that there was some other way that didn't involve the actual game plan of the game and the flow of the game.
Sure.
So
I think to me it will not be. This is my view. I think Gus has a very simple view of this kind of thing. He's not going to go like, well, I'm going to see how it's going.
Right.
He's going to tell everybody before the game, this is when you're going in. Don't ask me before then. You know, be ready at that point of the game with your helmet on. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, think about this. Let's say that Johnson goes out, leads us down the field to a touchdown. Do you put Nick in next? Let's say that Johnson goes out and goes three and out. Do you put Nick in next? What does that do to Johnson?
Now, again, this is what I'm saying. Gus is going to tell everybody before the game, Nick Marshall is coming in at blank.
Yeah.
Whether it's
regardless.
At halftime, it doesn't matter whether Johnson is, you know, scored 10 touchdowns or thrown 10 interceptions. Marshall's coming in at that point of the game.
I think
Gus doesn't care.
I think it needs to be before halftime because the fear is, I just got through saying we're not afraid of anything, but this is us. The concern on our sideline should be you don't want to set in stone that Nick comes in the second half. And let's just say things don't go well for Johnson. You've left yourself no wiggle room to put Nick in to try to salvage things until the third quarter.
I'm not worried about it.
All right. That's cool.
It's Arkansas.
That helps, certainly.
I mean, I don't know if you paid attention to this, but Vegas didn't lower the spread any when that Marshall news came out.
It's still like
20 and a half.
No offense, Arkansas, but...
No, I mean, I think that number one is the other part of that is, you know, Jeremy Johnson's pretty good. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm just having this vision that we have so little respect for Burt that Nick just comes out on the field and right before putting his helmet on, just like whips out a doobie and just like puffs away and then puts the helmet on and goes. I'm sorry.
All right. Moving on to the next question.
I'm very ashamed.
All right. This is from Rusty Owens, who says,
hey, Rusty,
at what point do the injuries on both sides of the ball reduce your optimism for this year?
Well, I mean, I think that the Kozan thing has really shaken me up a little bit. I wasn't.
Well, it's that plus the Lawson thing.
Plus Lawson. Oh, no. I mean, because the lines, right? I mean, it's the offensive and defensive line is the heart.
Well, it's not just that. I think the reason that I was so bullish on Auburn for this season overall, it's not just Gus and it's not just, you know, Nick Marshall coming back, whatever. It's that I felt like going into this season, Auburn could have the best offensive and defensive lines in the conference.
Yeah.
And I still think that could happen, but, you know, it's less likely than it was a month ago. So, but our offensive lines are still going to be in the top two or three in this offensive and defensive lines, still going to be in the top two or three in the SEC. They may just not be the best.
Do you feel that the Kozan and Lawson injuries taken together will cost us an extra loss more than you would have seen before?
Maybe.
Man.
I mean, it's two good guys. It's,
I'm not arguing with you. I just hate to think it, but no, I don't disagree. I just,
You know, the easy answer is no, because you have so much quality depth, but the shakeup on the offensive line, you know, it won't matter against the bad teams. It'll matter against the good teams. So.
Yep.
All right. Next question comes from Auburn Elvis.
Yay, Auburn.
Who says, give us a sales pitch for why Auburn will rush for greater than 200 yards a game without Trey Mason.
It's called Cameron Artis Payne and Corey Grant and Rock Thomas and Peyton Barber.
But, you know, given who he lost, he lost Greg Robinson, lost Trey Mason, why are we going to rush for more than 200 yards a game?
Well, we may not. I mean, we may be, if we can get the passing numbers up, we may, by necessity, it may balance out, you know, and so they won't have that many rushing yards. I mean, do you think we'll, there's no way we'll have more rushing yards overall this year than we did last year, right? There's no way. Because
no, that's not going to happen.
Right. I mean, because A, we won't have to rely on it as much, and B, we don't have Trey. So I think the rushing will be at worst adequate and at best really, really, really good. But it'll be a lower percentage, the good Lord willing, than it was last year, right?
Right. I mean, I think, number one, Gus is going to run the ball. I mean, we're going to throw the ball more than we did last year and more effectively than we did last year, but this is a running offense. Mm-hmm. So we have talented running backs. We have talented offensive line. Marshall can run the ball. We're going to run the ball a lot, and there isn't anybody out there that I'm particularly feel like can stop the running game in this conference. So, I mean, the worst rushing games we had last year were Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Okay, just throwing that out there because we had talked about them earlier.
Yeah, but that was earlier in the season, though, last year. We hadn't really gotten the diesel truck cranked up.
We hadn't got the zone read running, but I'm going to read this to you, okay? 36 rushing attempts for Auburn, 120 yards.
Man.
So Mississippi State shut down Auburn's running game last year. They got the running game working better after LSU, and that's when it took off. But I just want to throw that out there. They played us better against the run than anybody.
That's valid.
Okay. So, you know, lowest yards of carry the whole season was that game.
Yeah.
So I think – but, I mean, you look at – even without Trey Mason, even without Greg Robinson, we're going to run the ball a lot. We're going to run the ball, you know, 35 times every single game. And Auburn is going to average 250, 300 yards. It's going to happen.
You think we're going to average 250, 300?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
I did see something interesting. Kirby Smart, the Alabama defensive coordinator, said that the Alabama defensive backs will not see a better set of receivers all year than they see in practice every day. And my response to that was that I'm sorry to hear that the Iron Bowl has been canceled.
We'll see. It's a long way till then.
Yeah.
I'm sure their defensive backs are getting abused by Amari Cooper and them, but their secondary was pretty bad at times last year. So
yeah,
I'm not too scared of that.
No, I'm not either. Next.
All right, that's it for listener questions. The only other one is you got into a discussion with a couple of people online about the use of the word barner, and I thought we should clear that up.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking that we had one that went maybe to the AU Wishbone Twitter account. Did let me see. No, I don't guess so. I have to log in and come back in into that. I'm not going to do that right now. So what do you think about the about this Barner thing? I know that it's something that our friend over at the network, Blake Ells, likes to refer to as I think that the people that are sort of a decade younger than us or thereabouts, maybe a little bit more than that, younger than us, mm-hmm. that have always been on the internet, you know, to a certain degree. I think that it's a bigger thing with them because it's really an internet meme, right? It's not something that was ever said before the internet. I don't remember ever hearing the term barn or barner before email came along in the early 90s. Do you?
No.
Okay, so this generation has grown up with the internet and they've always heard it. And so they sort of have embraced it. And I get that approach. I understand what they're saying, that the argument is when somebody uses a slur of some kind to tease you, if you can embrace it and make it your own, you take the power away from it. I get that. But on the other hand, it's just so stupid. It's not something I'm ever really going to use because I just think it's just dumb. What do you think? Help me out here.
I'm not ever saying that about Auburn people. I get the idea that you take the insult away from other people, but it's a derogatory term, I think. So I'm like, no, I'm not saying that. So,
yeah. I mean, again, I think it's just generational, really.
Yep.
So there you go.
All right.
Is that it?
That's it. That's it for listener questions.
Well, all right. Well, I think we're kind of to the end now. Oh, I did want to point out that my new novel, The Shattering Legion 3 Kings of Oblivion, just came out. It's out on Kindle, and it's out in paperback. So any of you out there that read my fiction, if you've read Lords of Fire, Legion 1 Lords of Fire, Legion 2 Sons of Terra, the second part obviously came out like January of this year. And the third volume, it kind of wraps up this opening, this trilogy. There are probably more books in this series, but it's kind of like the opening story, the opening trilogy. Just came out. So if you go to my page on Amazon, just search Van Allen Plexico on Amazon. That series, that's the one where the first volume was a finalist for Novel of the Year in two different award, you know, two organizations. So please go check that out. I'm really proud of that series. And don't forget, check out Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams. This is the 75th anniversary of Jordan-Hare Stadium, and they'll be doing something to commemorate. I know. Did you notice that they've been throwing that little logo around?
I did see that. It's cool.
That when we were there at A-Day, they had the logo of the stadium and the 75 on the posters of the schedule they were giving out. So I was seeing it back in the spring and forgot to say anything about it. I was hoping we would do a stadium 75th anniversary book, but we basically included all that in Decades of Dominance. So if you haven't bought Decades of Dominance because you didn't want just stats, understand it also has the complete history with lots of little funny little anecdotes and stories about the building of the football stadium and the adding on over the years and the years and all the, you know, the decks and the circle and all that. So check out Decades of Dominance. Other than that, make sure you come back and join us in 2 weeks for the finale, where we will be looking at Georgia, keep wanting to say Stanford. Thank God we're not. Samford and Alabama. And then the episode after that, which will probably post 4 or 5 days later, we will have the long-awaited, much-anticipated SEC barbecue episode. And I can't wait, John.
Very excited.
Yep. So, any last thoughts?
Nah, I'm excited. There's real practice going on, real football to talk about.
Real tackle football is happening right now in the state of Alabama. We're excited. All right, so as always, at AU Wishbone on Twitter. Go to Facebook, facebook.com/AU Wishbone. We are totally AU Wishbone all day, every day now. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.